This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 150,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/bookhype. Welcome to Book Hype, episode 66. It's a two-person show. Karen and I have taken over.
Woo!
Yeah, it's good to be here. Today we are going to be talking all about Steelheart by Brandon Sanderson. But before we get there, we're going to do a little bit of Book Bites, a little bit of what we've been reading. So you can listen to the start and tune out after we get to the review. I heard on Twitter that's what some people do, Karen. Some people like listen to the start of the review shows and then they stop when we get to the review bit and then they go and read the book.
I mean, so that's good. Fair. Yeah, yep. That's cool.
I think that's cool. So I'm giving everyone a warning now. You can definitely listen to the start of this. Let's start off with what we've been reading. Do you want to go first?
Sure. Actually, this time is all audiobooks. That's all I've been doing lately, pretty much. And the first one I did was The Land of Stories, A Grim Warning by Chris Colfer. This is the third book in his Land of Stories series. It's the latest one that was published. We're still waiting on book four. And it was really good. It had everything that I liked about the first two books. The humor was really good. The story setup was really interesting. The bad guy was really interesting. But this one was, on the one hand, super tragic. There was a major character death, and it made me really sad. And then, on the other hand, there's a really, really big twist at the end. And I think I figured out the twist, like what it means exactly, but I was still super shocked at the end. Wait. When somebody popped up.
Oh, so you didn't see the twist coming, but you think you know what the ramifications are.
Yes.
I see.
Yeah.
Okay. That was very vague of you.
I don't want to spoil it.
That's good. It's good.
Yeah.
Please continue.
and then I read The Chronicles of Luminaea, 7 Days by Ben Hale. That's the third book in the Elsirian series that I've been reading. The second book was all about preparing for war. This one was about the war that was supposed to last 7 days. If they didn't make it to 7 days, then like the entire world was going to die and the bad guys would take over and it would be very bad. And yeah, it was really, really good. And like so many of my favorite characters died. And I listened to this pretty much whenever I can. And I was driving home and I was like crying. It was really embarrassing, but it was so good. So
that surprises me not at all.
I know. Got really emotional. And then I read The Chronicles of Luminaea, The List Unseen, which is the prequel to this trilogy. And it's about the main character's parents and how his mother was an oracle. And she had to set up everything that happened in the main trilogy. She had to make sure that people were right where they needed to be, that they were in certain positions of power, that they had certain items. And it was so interesting to see how, you know, it seemed like in the main trilogy, all this stuff came together and it was like, wow, how did this even happen? And then you go back to this book and you figure out exactly how it happened. And you see a lot of characters from the trilogy before they became the people that you know. And some of them, they were like the author revealed at the last second, like they would be called one name and then they reveal their true identity. And it was like so shocking to hear some of these people. And I know this doesn't make sense for like anybody that hasn't read the series, but it was really, really exciting. So if you haven't read the series yet, I recommend it 100%. I'm going to go out and get his other series, which is related to this one. I think it's going to be 5 books. I think the 5th one's coming out next year, and I think that might be the last one. But yeah, he's really good. I definitely recommend the audiobooks, though, because the narrator is really awesome.
Cool. That's everything?
Yes.
Sounds like you've been keeping busy.
Yes.
I have been reading a weird range of things, and I can't remember what I talked about, so I'm just going to go ahead and talk about these again. I read Girl Online by Zoe Sug? Don't know. She's a YouTuber, Zoella, And when her book came out, she broke like all the records for debut author release sales and sales, wow, in the first week and all of these crazy things, because she has this huge audience built in. So it does make sense. Girl Online is very cute. It's a young adult book. It's about a girl who starts a blog anonymously. Then she goes, so she's from the UK, she goes to New York and she meets this guy, and there's like a bit more to the guy than meets the eye, and then, oh, that rhymed, and then everything sort of goes crazy from there. It's very sweet. It's, you know, I think like it's quite mature for a debut, and I was not expecting to like it as much as I did, I suppose, but, you know, I guess from her, from the author's experiences in online media and YouTube and things like that, it's very well observed about, you know, the sort of ramifications of this internet lifestyle that we all live. So it's very cute. I think people like it. And, you know, there's like a love story, and it's good. You'll like it. It's just waiting to be turned into a film. I also read Fifth Avenue 5 a.m. by Sam Wasson, and this is a nonfiction book. It's about the making of Breakfast at Tiffany's, starring Audrey Hepburn, which is like classic film. Everyone should watch, obviously based on a classic book by Truman Capote. And it's very short, it's very cute, it's very well written. I'm currently reading Beatles versus Stones by John Macmillan. This is, I bought this at the Strand when we were there, Karen. And it is really good. It's like a also nonfiction. It's a joint history of the Beatles and the Rolling Stones, as their journeys sort of go parallel to each other and society at the time and everything. You guys know I'm like a huge nonfiction nerd by now, so this should not be surprising to anyone. Speaking of, I also read Girl Walks Into a Bar by Rachel Dratch, who was one of the women on Saturday Night Live. And, you know, she's kind of been here and there. She's a comedian. And it was really, really good. You know, I think I mentioned last time I was sort of in this like female comedian zone because I'd been reading Mindy Kaling and Amy Poehler, and I reread Tina Fey because she is, you know, the goddess of my life. And Rachel Dratch is another one in that line. This came out a while ago. I bought it at a secondhand store when I was overseas, so I'm just catching up on it. But it's really funny, and it's different from the others, so I would say worth reading, because she's had a very different sort of experience both in life and, I guess, arguably, you know, she's less successful. She's not as well known as Tina Fey and Amy Poehler and all of those women. So it's interesting to read about someone who had a kind of similar start in terms of being an improv comedian and all of this, and then how their paths sort of diverged as they matured and attempted to, you know, continue after Saturday Night Live. So definitely worth reading. And then I also read or looked at Behind the Scenes by Judi Dench. And I say looked at because it's sort of a picture photo book. Not a whole lot of writing in it. It's very nice. It would be a good Christmas present for someone who's into Judi Dench or into theater or film, because she basically has a million photographs from across her career, and then she writes little anecdotes that accompany them about like working with certain people or working in certain productions or her family or whatever. So yeah, it's very sweet. You know, it took me about, I don't know, 45 minutes to read it or something because there's no writing in it. But she has another similar book to this, I believe, but I have not read that one. So yeah, that's what's going on. That's it. I've just been, you know, fallen into my love of nonfiction once again. What can I say? We are going to jump to book bites in a second, and we're going to be talking about some very exciting book news that came not too recently, was announced. Before we do that, we would like to remind you that this podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks, with more than 150,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature and featuring audio versions of many New York Times bestsellers. For our listeners, Audible is offering one free audiobook to give you a chance to try out their service. And one audiobook you might like to consider is Steelheart by Brandon Sanderson. I know some of you listen to the podcasts, these review shows, without having, you know, read or listened to the book yet. So if you're about to switch off before we get to our review section, maybe you'd like to listen to the audiobook instead of reading it for a different experience. Or if you've already read Steelheart and you don't want to do a repeat, maybe check out one of those like 400 books that Karen just told you, because they were all audiobooks and she really liked them. Which would you, what would you recommend? What should people do? What's the top pick of all the audiobooks you've been listening to recently, Karen?
Oh gosh, that is kind of hard because I really like Chris Colfer as a narrator for his own book. He does a really great job with it, but I'd have to say El Sirian, just because I think it's sort of like, it's not really a mainstream book. It's high fantasy. I found out the guy actually started it by self-publishing it, and I really think that it's worth the time to listen to it, so I would definitely recommend El Sirian by Ben Hale.
Well, cool. So if none of those capture your fancy, we gave 1,000 recommendations of books last week on our Bookmas. Get it? It's like Book Christmas. That was funny. I thought it was funny. I didn't
think
of that joke.
Thank you. Karen, I felt really, really clever when I did that.
Yeah, there is many a book recommendation in the show notes for that. So maybe there's an audiobook there that you want to check out. And if you want to get one of those books we've just mentioned or something else, you can go to audiblepodcast.com/bookhype. That's audiblepodcast.com/bookhype. And we thank Audible very much for their support of the show. Let's talk about some crazy news, Karen. What am I talking about? Everyone knows exactly what I'm talking about. Rainbow Rowell broke the world and the internet and everyone's brains last week when she announced that her next book is going to be a fangirl spin-off, and it's going to be the book Carry On, which is the fan fiction that is like interspersed throughout Fangirl. Weirdest thing that has ever happened. So
yeah.
It's coming out in October 2015, and the synopsis has been released. So shall we read it? Let's have a look. Simon Snow just wants to relax and savor his last year at the Watford School of Magic, but no one will let him. His girlfriend broke up with him, his best friend is a pest, and his mentor keeps trying to hide him away in the mountains where maybe he'll be safe. Simon can't even enjoy the fact that his roommate and longtime nemesis is missing because he can't stop worrying about the evil Git. Plus, there are ghosts and vampires and actual evil things trying to shut Simon down. When you're the most powerful magician the world has ever known, you never get to relax and savor anything. Carry On is a ghost story, a love story, a mystery, and a melodrama. It has just as much kissing and talking as you'd expect from a Rainbow Rowell story, but far, far more monsters. So, are we excited about this? What are we feeling about this?
I'm kind of on the fence about it, okay? And I really want to be super excited for it because, first of all, this is her first fantasy series, and I'm really excited to see what she does with that. And, I mean, she's a fantastic author. I really trust her. But it feels like Harry Potter. I'm just going to say it. It feels like Harry and Draco. And right. I'm trying, like, I really want to get that out of my head when I read this because I want to enjoy it. But when I was reading those parts in Fangirl, it was just really hard to kind of separate yourself from that.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely felt, I think I made a joke on Twitter that this is just basically Harry Draco fan fiction, right? Like,
yeah.
I love Rowell and all of that, but I mean, no one's under any illusions that that's not what this is. And it was kind of fun in the book because there wasn't a lot of it, and it sort of tied in with what else was going on and all of that. But I don't know if I want to read a whole book of Harry Potter fan fiction. I'm just not sure how I feel about that. I'm sure it'll be very well done. I'm sure it will be, you know, very very funny and, you know, romantic and all of those things that her books have been, but it's just off-putting to me. And I can't, and these sections in the book were not my favorite sections anyway. Like these were not my favorite sections in Fangirl, and I remember they weren't yours.
Yeah. The thing is, like, it's, the premise is so silly. Like it's, I mean, Harry Potter in a lot of ways can be sort of silly, but underneath all of that, it's got a very serious sort of like moral to it. And this, like, Carry On I think could be that way if she maybe changed the tone of it, but from reading that synopsis, it seems like it's going to be really silly, sort of like tongue in cheek, which I think is okay, if she can pull it off and make us sort of just fall in love with it, but I don't know, I'm a little apprehensive.
Yeah, same. We are going to get a look at it earlier than October because there is a new special edition of Fangirl coming out in May of next year, and there's going to be a sneak peek of Carry On within that. So, maybe that will give us a better idea about it. I don't know. This just makes me, I just think about, all of the books, like, okay, devil's advocate, but like, why, how is this different in a way to like 50 Shades of Grey? You know what I mean? Like books that were essentially fan fiction that have then been turned into a book. Like this was kind of a joke in the book because it was kind of this Harry Potter-esque story. But then Harry Potter also existed in the world, so that always like confused me
Yeah.
somewhat. But how is this, different in a way than that?
I mean, it's not erotica. I
Yeah,
mean, at
but
least
in
that we
terms of
know of.
like, well, yeah, but in terms of like, aside from the steaminess of 50 Shades, I feel like a lot of criticism it gets is the fact that it started out as fan fiction, and whether or not Rainbow Rowell is saying so or not, I don't know if she has said like, yeah, this was kind of my way to write a bit of fanfic in my books, but that's basically what it is, and it's not, incredibly subtle. But I don't know. It confuses me a lot.
Yeah, I
Let me
mean,
see.
let's be real. We all just really want a fangirl movie anyway, so can we just work on that instead?
Yeah, I would rather, so that's the thing. I would rather a Fangirl like sequel about the actual characters in Fangirl rather than, or like a Reagan spin-off, because she was my fave, as everyone knows, because she was the best, rather than this. Because also, like, don't we know how this story goes? Haven't we?
I think so.
Do
We
we
don't.
see sections of it? And, they kind of talked about, I mean, it's been a little while since I've read Fangirl, so please, listeners, I'm sure you will correct me if I'm wrong. But didn't we kind of get that, they sort of get together? And the other thing about this is, obviously, it's super great that she's writing a fantasy book that's going to have a non-heterosexual relationship in it, because that's basically like where this is going, isn't it? That was the whole thing. That's great. I think that's really good. So, that's always a good thing, because I th we've talked about this before, and we talked about like LGBT representation, but a lot of the time those kinds of stories, they get relegated to contemporary YA, and they don't come up in, fantasy or genre books. So that's great to see, but like you said, it's kind of tongue in cheek, so I'm not sure how that's going to work. I think we're just generally apprehensive about this.
Yeah, I want to be excited. That's the first thought that came to my mind when this news was announced. I really want to be excited about it, but I'm just not right now. And I think maybe as we get more material from it, it'll be better. I don't know. I do plan on reading it. I do want to see what it's going to be like, but I don't
Oh
know.
yeah, I would definitely read it, but I wasn't a huge fan of those sections, so that would tell me maybe I wouldn't like this as much. Then again, like we only got little paragraphs from it, so it's difficult to judge of that. I actually wonder if she's going to put those paragraphs like verbatim in the, not all of the sections in Fangirl were from Carry On, if I remember correctly. Like some of them were meant to be from her earlier writing with her sister, but some of them were. And I wonder if they're gonna pop up, word for word in the book. That would be funny to me if they didn't. Yeah, I don't know. It's all a bit Inception-y, like the book inside the book, and then it's gonna be, I don't know, it's weird. The book inside the book based off like the best-selling books of all time. Anyway,
Yeah, isn't
whatever.
that what I think Andrew, was it Andrew that wrote the article? He said something like that, and I had to laugh because it was hilarious the way that he worded it.
Honestly, it's probably, yeah, it sounds like him. So, we'll keep you posted about what's going on with this. It's an exciting time for Rainbow Rowell fans. Who know? So we shall see. All right, let's talk about Steelheart. If you haven't read or listened to Steelheart yet, this is your time to switch off, and then we will be back next time with whatever we decide to talk about. So you can listen to us again then. But for those of us who have read Steelheart, Karen, why don't you tell us, is it worth buying, borrowing, or just don't bother?
Of course I'm going to say it's worth buying. I really, really loved this book. It's very X-Men, I think, and it's just sort of a, I don't want to say fun, because I think it is tragic in a lot of ways, but it's fairly easy reading, and it's just a cool superhero story. So yeah, I would definitely recommend checking it out.
Yeah, I would also say buy it. I'm kind of in two minds about this book, but I think it is worth reading, and I know a lot of people who would really enjoy it. So yeah, I would say buy it, and then maybe make a decision whether you want to continue on with the rest of the series or not. Steelheart came out last year, and the reason that we are reviewing it is because the second book in the series is going to be out early next year. So we thought, hey, that's a good time. And also Karen really wanted to talk about it. So yes. Sometimes we listen to Karen.
Yes, that's what I was just going to say.
Very occasionally, when no one else wants to make a decision, we listen to Karen. Okay, Karen. So yeah, like you said, this is kind of, it's very X-Men gone bad, as it were. That's sort of the log line for it, which is, I mean, it's a cool premise. I liked it. What did you think about the idea of the epics, the bad X-Men?
Yeah, I thought that was really interesting. I mean, kind of sad that the superheroes ended up being the bad guys. I mean, there really isn't a whole lot of good guy epics, which we find out later why that is. But I think the whole idea of Calamity, which is the star that sort of just kind of pops into existence in the sky one day, and then all these people start changing, I think that's really interesting and something that, I don't know, I'm not a huge comic book fan, so I don't know like all of the origin stories, but that's not something that I think we typically see a lot as for how people get their powers. So, and the fact that it's called Calamity, which is just such a really badass name in my opinion. Yeah, I thought it was really cool.
Yeah, I agree with you. Calamity is cool. Now, this is one of those times when, as we all know, like, I don't like unexplained things when they're not unexplained for a reason. So I'm assuming that, like, Calamity and all of this is going to be addressed later on in the book. But if it just turns out that this is later on in the series, I should say. But if it just turns out that this is like, oh, and then this thing turned up and then we all got superpowers. Okay, the end. Like, let's move on. I will be so mad because I hate these, like, unexplained origins of things. It just feels like lazy writing to me. So, you know, given the benefit of the doubt, it's the first book, you're obviously not going to address all of these things immediately. But that was definitely one of the most intriguing aspects to me, was where did these powers come from? Mm-hmm. And what is Calamity? And, you know, why does it, like, shine through the darkness that's, like, created and all of these things. So
In Calamity, many unexplained. Calamity is actually the name of the last book in the series. So I'm hoping that, like, the final reveal will be then. Because it's kind of cool to keep it a mystery for now, because they're more worried about the immediate consequences of what's going on, Steelheart and the epics. Whereas I think later on, the world will sort of get bigger for us and for the Reckoners, and we'll find out, okay, maybe, like, how do we stop Calamity from giving people powers and making them evil?
Yeah, I think that's very well observed. I thought Steelheart as a, you know, the idea of Steelheart, not the book, the character, and David's experiences with him was a really great way to introduce readers to this world, because it's, like you said, it's very focused. It keeps us kind of going on this little journey that he's got without worrying about these huge big picture things. But at the same time, we're introduced to them all so they can come back later. So yeah, I'm sure Calamity and the epics and all of these things will come back to us. What about the city? What did you think? It's, you know, post-apocalyptic America. Like, wow, how unique. We've never seen that before.
I mean, you know that I love dystopian novels, so this was definitely right up my alley. Having recently been to Chicago, I was pretty excited to realize that, well, I first read this last year when it came out, and then I sort of skimmed over it again to be able to do this, and I was like, I forgot it had taken place in Chicago, so I can sort of imagine the city a little bit better now, which is always cool. But yeah, they call it Newcago now, and the entire place is steel, which I think is a really interesting visual, and I like the idea that you have like the top part of the city where, you know, people would normally live these days is sort of reserved for the people with power, the epics, and then everybody else was sort of driven underground. And they, Steelheart lets them stay down there as long as they sort of just stay out of his way. And, you know, they're allowed to basically do whatever they want. And it's hard living, but they're a little bit safer. And even Newcago in general is safer than a lot of other places in the world. So I think that that's an interesting sort of juxtaposition, that the whole place is steel, that the people are driven underground, and yet it's still safer than some of the other places in the United States.
Yeah, I like the tunnels. I like the steel. I just get sick of like American post-apocalyptic things. I do. I just, okay, this is honestly, maybe it's just because I'm foreign, but like there are other places in the world. It doesn't have to be America. You know, it could be any other continent. Just choose another one. Just put it somewhere else. It's, I mean, I get he wanted to do like a Newcago and like whatever, but I mean, Divergent and like everything else is just, okay, we get it. Like America is at one point going to blow everything up and like, whatever. That's basically seems to be what the amount of dystopian novels are telling me. Yeah. But
we're very egocentric.
It's a minor criticism, but it does frustrate me somewhat. Not just Steelheart, but like this genre in general, this like fixation on America. You're right. Egocentric. That would be a, that would be an apt description. But yeah, the visual of it all being steel and everything, that is very cool. And it, you know, it gives you a sense of like the power of these people to turn a whole city to steel, like to be able to affect this much change. It's kind of insane. And, you know, it gives us a sense of like what they're dealing with. So, and something that the Reckoners like have to face every single day. Like, I don't know. I have to say, I wanted to know more about the Diggers. Was that just me? Because they kept saying,
interesting.
Well, yeah, they kept saying like, oh, and then the Diggers got powers and then they went crazy. And I was like, wait, but what about the Diggers? Like, I want to know more about someone. Tell me about the Diggers. It was, I don't know. I thought that was a thing that was like going to be addressed again. But then I was just like, oh, no, that's why the tunnels are so weird, because the Diggers are crazy. It's like, oh, that was a shame. Maybe they'll come back. Who knows? Probably not. But I wanted to know about them. Okay, let's talk about the characters. So you mentioned David before. What did you think about David? Honestly, I couldn't remember his name for like this entire book. Every time they called him these, I was like, yeah. And then they called him David and I was like, who's David? Oh, this guy's David.
Yeah, I kept forgetting too, which is really unfortunate given he's the main character.
Well, I mean, at the same time, it makes sense because like he's not talking about himself in the third person. Right. So.
Yeah, definitely. In general, I really liked David. I thought he had a cool personality. I liked that he was bad at metaphors. That's something that really stuck out to me and gave him more of like, he became more three-dimensional for me with that. And I really liked how he just made it his whole life's purpose to go after Steelheart. And you can understand why, of course, but it wasn't one of those fleeting things that, yeah, I'm just going to go up to him one day and I'm just going to kill him. Like, he planned it out meticulously, and he knew his best chance would be with the Reckoners. He knew his best chance would be to learn about epics and all this other stuff, and he was really dedicated to that. And I think that made him really interesting.
Yeah, I also enjoyed the planning aspect. I think that's because we read so many of these books where the plan is like Harry Potter style. Oh, let's break into the ministry and then improvise from there. You know, it was so nice to have a character who was like dedicated to learning and planning and the fact that, you know, information was really the power of the Reckoners. It wasn't, they didn't have like a huge arsenal or any of these things, but it's a small group and a small informed group. I found that very interesting. The fact that it was like these new powers they didn't understand versus like not intellect, but intelligence and information and education. And, you know, when David was talking about how he doesn't want to be a nerd because the smart kids got taken out of school, and Prof says to him, like, that's because Steelheart is threatened by intelligence. You know, I thought that was a very interesting take on it. I hated the metaphor thing so much. It was the worst thing because it didn't have any point to it. Like, he wasn't making a point. He wasn't saying like, oh, David has been, you know, isolated from people, so he kind of doesn't understand these like these basic things that you know, we all take for granted, but, you know, you kind of need to be taught about the way you see the world, or like, you know, he doesn't understand social cues, social conventions or anything like this. It was just like this really obnoxious thing about him making bad metaphors, and I didn't enjoy it at all. I was like, is this just Anderson not being able to make a metaphor? Like, is this just his way of getting out of making metaphors? Because these are terrible and very frustrating to read. So yeah, didn't like that at all. Found that super annoying. But aside from that, yeah, I like David. You know what else I liked, which is a weird thing? I really liked how everyone in this book kind of has normal names. You know, I feel like so often you read a dystopian and, yeah, it's like a futuristic dystopian. It's obviously set in America or whatever. But for some reason, like, society is totally different. And you always wonder, like, how did they get to that point?
Yeah.
You know, how did they get there? Whereas this seemed like a much more natural progression, I suppose. You know, I guess it's not too far divided. Like, it's not generations after this had happened. You know, it's all within the same generation. Mm-hmm. So that makes sense. But I just like those little touches. I thought they were good. And, you know, Tia, especially when she's talking about, like, servers and, you know, computers and all of these things. And you're like, oh, yeah, you know, you see the connection, which I appreciated. Just a little thing, but I liked that a lot. What about well, can we talk about David's dad for a second? Isn't that, yeah, like the saddest thing ever?
The way that he died?
Yes. It was so sad. I read the prologue and I was like, Karen, what are you doing to me? Like, I'm feeling things. I don't like it.
Oh, yes.
I felt so bad for his dad. It's so, you know, I understand, you know, the point of that came back at the end, but like the tragedy of his father and, you know, the little that we know about him was just, I guess it, you know, it gave him the motivation to keep going, but like it also gave me motivation to keep reading in a way, because I wanted to know, you know, what was so special about this guy. And yeah, I don't know. I really liked him as character. He really stuck out to me. Maybe that's just me. What about the Reckoners?
The Reckoners were pretty cool. I liked them.
Who's your fave?
Oh gosh, that's hard. I mean, I really like Megan, which, I don't know, might be sort of a weird thing, but I like that she was the point woman, and that the first time we see her, she's in this really, like, tight red dress, and she's all dolled up to get the one epic, whose name was he Foresight, or what was his name? Fortuity. Right?
Yeah,
Fortuity.
Yeah. I remembered.
And then she sort of rips that off and she's got like this tank top and these shorts on, and she ends up like shooting him with both guns at the same time. And it was really cool to see in such a short amount of time the two sides of her. And I thought that her twist at the end was one of the most interesting parts about the book. And especially since the next book's called Firefight, I'm really, really excited to learn more. So I definitely liked Megan the most, I think.
Yeah, let's talk about her for a second. I did not like her.
Why am I not surprised? I knew as I was saying all of that, I'm like, Marima's totally just going to disagree with me.
I didn't like her. I don't like insta-love in books. So that's one bad tick against this whole relationship. Although I do like, you know, there is one point where David kind of undermines it by being like, why am I so sad? Like, I've known this girl for like 5 seconds.
Yeah.
And these people have known her for like 6 months, so I should probably calm down. But then he doesn't. He's still like, oh, Megan. I I just thought, I don't know, I found the kind of femme fatale like aspect of her a little overemphasized, I guess, which is, you know, it's definitely there in like the physical description of her, like curves and big eyes and like big lips and all of this. And the first time that we see her in the red dress, I don't know. I liked her a lot more after the twist that she was Firefight. I liked her a lot more after that because it made her a lot more interesting. But before that, she was just boring to me. She was a really boring character. I was just waiting for her to become like the boring love interest rather than like the boring almost love interest. Because like that, that was just not, maybe it's just that aspect of the story, like their kind of his attempted romance with her anyway was like the least interesting part of this book to me, so I found it tedious when he's like dwelling on it. But yeah, I don't like insta love and her mood swings and all of that. Until you find out why that's happening, they're super obnoxious. So
I definitely agree with that. And I do think that the love interest part was the least interesting part about this book, because you have so much else going on and you have such this big scale of a story, and Steelheart is just this person who is so far away that he feels unreachable, and yet, like, you know, he's concentrating on love and Megan and how he feels about her and how she makes him feel, and it's like, dude, you have way more important things to worry about right now.
Yeah, and you kind of get the sense that it's because he's, like, literally never seen another girl his age or something. You know, he's like, oh, I've been secluded by myself. I'm, like, studying. Oh, my God, a girl? Like, whoa, drop everything. You know, you're like, get it together. Come on, dude. So, yeah, I think because so much, maybe it's just because we get his perspective, we don't get hers in this book. Right. So because it's all from his perspective and he's just dwelling on like the romance side, that made me not like her, which is interesting because it probably should make me not like him. But I didn't like him in those moments either. But, you know, we get a chance to see a more well-rounded version of him because we're inside his head, but we don't get the same for her. So hopefully, like you said, that will be rectified possibly in book 2, Firefight, which is going to be out early next year, right? It's like
January 6th.
It's like January. Yeah. Yep. So super soon we will be able to find out.
Yeah. Who was your favorite Reckoner then?
I think, I don't know. I don't know if I liked any of them that much.
Really?
No, I liked them all in general. I think this was a thing, you know, like he dropped a lot of hints. It became very clear not that far into the book that there was going to be a mole within the group. And then as I was reading it, being like, okay, who's the mole? Like, who's the weak link in this group? You know, rather than like kind of enjoying the characters for what they were.
That makes sense.
Yeah, and I think he did a pretty good job of like making it plausible that it was Abraham. I feel like that was probably the main suspect. You know, he drops some red herrings for all of them, but I thought Abraham was the main one. I don't know how you felt. I liked them all. I found them all interesting, but I found them interesting, you know, as a group, like with their group dynamic more so than singularly. I think
I'll agree with that. I think, like, for me, Tia was probably the weakest link in terms of who I liked the least, because I just thought she was kind of boring, and I like the fact that she knew more about Prof than anyone else, and like they had a more solid relationship, but I never really enjoyed her character. I think the other ones stood out to me a lot more. Like Abraham was that very soft-spoken but very dangerous kind of person, and Cody was the sort of funny one, and even Prof was like this enigma that David had to figure out, and he had all this history behind him, and I always found the rest of them way more captivating than I found Tia.
Yeah, but she doesn't get as much time, to be fair. And also, she's mainly, like, reading books and things and not, you know, blowing things up. So she seems less cool for that reason, because it's just kind of bland. But, yeah, I would agree with you. I think, you know, what makes Tia most compelling was her relationship with Prof and, like, trying to work out what that was and how they knew each other and all of this, because obviously she was a lot more clued in than the rest of the team. I just found them to be like a really interesting group, really well balanced. I thought their relationship with David in terms of him working out, you know, he'd basically been hero worshipping these people for his whole life. And then he gets there and he's like, oh, like they're just normal people who fight about things and who, mm-hmm. you know, make jokes and et cetera. And, you know, I thought that was a really interesting dynamic between them. It was just, yeah, I don't know. I guess Prof's probably the most interesting of all of them. But like you said, that's just because there is so much about him that we sort of don't know. But I did find Abraham interesting and him being one of the faithful, and that sort of connection with David's father. And I'm wondering if that will come back. Well, I'm assuming that will come back, the whole aspect of, like, you know, believing that the good epics are on their way or whatever, because otherwise why put it in there? So big reveals. I guess before we talk about the epic reveals, Megan's death. Do you see that coming?
I mean, in a way, it sort of felt like something had to happen, you know, like something had to give. But at the same time, you always read it and you're like, okay, they say she died, but is she really dead? And I think in this case, it, like, such a distinct amount of time passed that you're like, oh my God, she is dead. And then, oh my God, she's not dead anymore. And it was very confusing. But yeah, I remember being fairly surprised by that and pretty sad that she had died, because, you know, I did actually like her.
Yeah, I was kind of relieved. I definitely thought that one of the Reckoners was going to die, because it just seemed like they kept talking about how high the stakes were and everything. So it wouldn't have really made sense if they had been able to take on Steelheart without some loss. But then once she died, I was like, oh, she's coming back. Like, oh no. If one of the others had died, I would have been like, oh, it's sad, you know, that's by Abraham or, you know, by Cody. But when it was Wiccan, I was like, oh no, she'll be back. Yeah. Like at some point, because, you know, we've spent so much time building up this possible relationship. And then he says to her, like, oh, I've known you for like a hot 30 seconds and you're like the greatest person and the love of my life. And you're like, calm down. Just, all right, calm down, dude. That said, you know, he says later about carrying the dying girl on his back, like carrying her back to the bolt hole. And that is a very sad visual. That is a very compelling visual that Sanderson puts in there. So, you know, props for that. I did not see that she was Firefight coming. Like, that was a big surprise. That was, to me, the biggest shock of the book, more so than Prof being an epic. And I think once that happened, I was like, oh, this is a much better book than I thought it was. You know, like I had enjoyed it up to that point. I had really enjoyed it, but that was kind of a turning point for me of being like, oh, maybe I will keep going with this series, because up to that point, I probably was thinking I won't, just because, you know, I thought it was good and I enjoyed it, but there's something about it that just didn't really grab me. I don't know why. But yeah, that twist came and I was like, oh, this is a really good book. Like, that's been set up very well. That was a very good twist.
I'm just like pumping my fist right now. I feel so vindicated. Like, yes, I do make good decisions.
That I liked it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, because you never know, especially when you and Jen especially read so many books. And so to say, hey, you should read this book, you might like it, I think is really hard, because you've read such a large scope that your standards tend to be pretty high. I mean, I'm sort of the same way. I mean, I'm pretty chill for the most part, and I like nearly everything that I read. But I think for most people, that just isn't the case. So when you're like, I really love this book, I'm trusting you to like it too, don't let me down. And then you're like, oh yeah, it is pretty good. Then it's just, it feels really nice.
Oh, well, you're welcome. Happy to help out. yeah, I think we knew that there was going to be something bigger happening with Firefight, because of the way he kept saying like, oh, it's no big deal, guys, no big deal. And you're like, it's going to be a big deal, David. This is going to be a huge deal. Like, you need to be a little more concerned about this. But I did not see it coming that it was her, although it did make a lot of sense once that was explained. I guess I'm not super clear on how that all works with the reincarnation and everything yet, but I'm, like you said, I'm assuming we're going to get a lot more of that in book two.
Yeah.
So what about, oh no, go ahead.
I was probably just going to ask the same thing that you did, but Prof,
Oh, yeah.
Because
Mild
I was,
mouth.
I mean, for him, I think because he was such an enigma and you just kind of felt the entire time that something else was going on, that was less of a surprise, but still at the same time, it's like, okay, the leader of the Reckoners is an epic. That's a pretty big deal.
Yeah, I guess the moment when he comes out in the tunnel, wearing the what I now can't remember tenses, when he's wearing them and he, starts blasting away the soldiers down there, and calls himself Limelight and all of this. That's when I was like, oh, he's an epic. That he couldn't have done that otherwise. Like we've been shown sort of the limitations of what these things can do, and that would make a lot of sense. And so, once that happened, I wasn't surprised when the reveal finally came. I guess I was surprised how I just didn't put it together about him gifting them with his powers, which I probably should have based on their conversation that they have earlier on. But yeah, it was not so much of a surprise, but it is an interesting twist. Because it does bring into question this whole thing about good epics and bad epics. Because as we see with Prof and Megan, they both go a bit nuts and go a bit evil when they start using their powers a lot. And that's explained as like why Megan has these weird mood swings, and same with Prof, and why he is just super mean when he, basically saves David and they have to carry Megan out of there. So that's a very interesting twist. I find that interesting, more so than, Prof being an epic, probably, because like this is the intriguing part to me is that Prof specifically, yeah, he becomes kind of a bad guy when he uses these things, but he doesn't, turn on his friends or anything. He doesn't like immediately become someone who's, trying to like take over the world like Steelheart or anything like this. He just becomes kind of mean about things. So I'm wondering if that's because, he doesn't use them that often, or if that's because, maybe depending on like a person's character or their moral strength or whatever, using their powers might make them slightly unbearable to be around, but doesn't necessarily make them into a bad person. I don't know. What do you think about all of that?
Oh, sorry. I was just thinking about the commercial. I don't know if you would have seen this. I mean, I think so, but the Snickers commercial when they're like, "You're not you when you're hungry,"
Oh,
and they turn into somebody else. I just
yes.
imagine Prof like David going up to him and be like, "Eat a Snickers. You're not you when you're an epic."
Yeah.
Wow, sorry. Okay. I'm actually of two minds with this whole like good epic versus bad epic thing because on the one hand, I'm a little disappointed that the epic powers make them crazy because I think it's much more interesting coming from like a human characteristic where you have all this power and you can't help yourself that, you can take anything you want and it sort of corrupts you. Like he says at one point, absolute power corrupts absolutely. And I think to kind of delve into the psyche, that's a much more interesting story. But on the other hand, I also think it's kind of cool that they can't help it, and yet there are some of them that fight it, and they really don't want to be these bad people, and they've sort of learned how to stop using their powers and control themselves so that they can sort of be normal and good again.
Okay, so feeding into that then, I think the most interesting epic that we meet is Conflux, who is, basically the battery of the city. Now, this is someone who's using his powers all the time, essentially, but he doesn't have any power. So, like, if you're saying like the power is what corrupts people, that would go into this, because I find him the most interesting because he's basically just like a normal guy. When they capture him, he's the most normal of all of them, and he gives Tia the power to use a copter, He, you know, helps him out a little bit with various things. And it doesn't seem like his personality changes at all with those things. Like, he's still very just like, oh, quite pleasant. And, oh, you know, Steelheart's going to come and murder you. And it's going to be like quite horrific. But until then, you know, like, thanks for the tea and et cetera. I found him the most interesting because I think he proves that, I guess, well, it's not just like all epics are bad, but, you know, I guess even the level of like corruption that you get from the powers depends on the person as well. Like, there's a scale for that too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I found him the most intriguing, and that was not explained. So again, I'm sure this will be a thing that is returned to later on. I don't know. Were you kind of stuck on him as well, like I was, or was that not a big deal?
Yeah, definitely, because he was so cheerful all the time, and it was like, what, you know, what is that? Like, what's that from? Why is that a thing? But I guess, you know, we have sort of seen that before in Megan and Prof, especially because he had to have made the decision to stop using his powers in order to get rid of the crazy in his head. And so that means that even while he was using his powers, he was of his like sound mind enough to make that decision. And so, yeah, I think you're right. There's definitely got to be a scale there. And maybe that Conflux is just one extreme end of the scale.
Yeah. And maybe it's because, I don't know, I just, that like thing you said about absolute power corrupts absolutely. That's a great quote. That does bring Conflux to mind because he's basically a slave to Steelheart, so he has no power. So maybe that's why he is able to control it better or something, because it's not, you know, even though he can use his power, it doesn't give him like power over other people in the way that the other epics' different powers do, you know? So it's not like he can't get away from himself by saying like, oh, and then I'm gonna, you know, do this, and then I'm gonna be in charge of everything, and then I'm gonna be a dictator, etc. He's just like, okay, and now I'm gonna power the city from the back boot of this car. Like, good times, guys. So yeah, he was very interesting. Okay, anything else you want to say about Steelheart?
I mean, we have to talk about Steelheart's weakness and his death.
Tell me about that. Karen, what do you think about Steelheart's weakness and his death?
This was probably my favorite part of the book because I could not figure out how they were going to fix this problem. And they thought they had a solution, and in the end, it didn't seem like it was going to work. And, you know, I will say all of a sudden he figures it out, which I think is very convenient. But that part aside, I really liked the fact that his weakness was somebody who didn't fear him. And he ended up killing himself, which I think was just a great way to end that. And I don't know why, but I really like the visual of like his steel skull and David just like carrying that around as his little trophy.
Yeah, it's so creepy. I really like this. I kind of knew, and I really hope that it was something to do with the father rather than the gun or the vault or whatever, because that would have been a letdown. But at the same time, you know, you knew that none of the reasons that they gave were going to work out. Like, none of their plans were going to work. It was going to take some improvising, mm-hmm. because otherwise that would have been a bit of an anticlimax. But yeah, I think he set it up well with David thinking that it was Crossfire and, you know, he wasn't meaning to hit him, and his father being one of the faithful and all of these things, as well as, you know, Steelheart's need to like intimidate and scare everyone in the city while at the same time providing for them, which, you know, was this like weird kind of paradox that I didn't understand until the end of it. I thought it all tied in really nicely, and, you know, it's always a little bit of a, well, it's a bit of a cliche to be like, oh, and like, you know, the villain accidentally kills himself and whatever. But in this case it worked because, like David says, you know, the only person who doesn't fear Steelheart is Steelheart. So it couldn't have really gone down any other way. yeah, like you said, it's somewhat convenient that they work it out right at the end. But hey, like, I guess the adrenaline's pumping. You put things together that you didn't before. But yeah, I guess they talk about all the other epics' weaknesses. Like at one point they say, you know, there was one epic who could only be killed by someone who was like exactly like 37 years old or yes. something like that. And I was just thinking, oh, don't make it something like that. Like, don't make it this weirdly, you know, you can only be killed by someone who has like exactly, you know, 4,000 hairs on their head or like some weird, some like weird, obscure thing that would just make no sense at all. So I'm glad it wasn't something like that. And for a little while, when they kept mentioning these like specific weaknesses, I was a little concerned it was going in that direction. But like I said, I think the last quarter of this book really, really sold this series for me. And Steelheart's death, you know, was a part of that. I think the writing improved, like the strength of the writing. It all came together really well for me at the end. So, yeah, I liked it. I thought it was very clever. Mm. And I always enjoy when a book can surprise me because it doesn't happen that often.
Yeah, I think that's one of the big reasons why I like this book is because in the end you're just like, wait a second, what just happened? And, yeah, it just kind of takes you off guard a little bit, which is cool.
Yeah, so I think that wraps it up for our Steelheart review. Firefight, which is book 2 in the Reckoner series, that is out on the 6th of January next year. There is like a little novella, I think, that's already out called Mitosis. Yes. And so you can check that out if you want to read a bit more Sanderson in between. And then there's a Calamity is book 3. And this is just going to be a trilogy, right?
I believe so.
Yeah. And Calamity is set for January 2016. So, you know, he's pumping him out nice and quickly to keep us all going. So, Karen, I'm assuming that you're going to read Firefight.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
That'd be correct. I think I'm going to check it out as well. I think cool. That will be the make or break for me. I'm very interested in the Firefight side of Megan's character. I'm not so interested in the love interest side. Yeah. So a book focused on her, I think, yeah, you know, these books are pretty quick to get through. Like his books, they're very readable. So that's nice.
Definitely. And I think it's fair going into the second book, having enjoyed the first one and sort of just being like, okay, you have to like step up your game a little bit. And, you know, it's not a huge series, so if you were to sit down and want to read all three, I think that would be fine. If not, you know, I think Firefight is going to be really different now that we know who Firefight is. And I know I'm really interested in reading the third one just because it is called Calamity. But I think if you enjoyed the first one and don't really enjoy the second one, you can just kind of, you know, leave it at that. I don't think that would be a big deal.
Yeah. And we had a tweet that made me laugh so hard from Liker and Art, who said, reading Steelheart thanks to Book Hype, and all I keep thinking is no capes. And I'm assuming they mean from The Incredibles with Edna. And I thought the exact same thing. Have you seen The Incredibles, Karen?
Please tell me. A very long time ago, yeah.
Oh, there's this great scene in it where Edna, who is the like costume designer, essentially, won't give a cape to Mr. Incredible because you know, all of these superheroes have been like sucked into jet engines you know, caught in like all of these things. And she's just like, no capes. And I thought the exact same thing when I read, you know, Steelheart with his like billowing cape behind him. I was like, oh no, that's a mistake. Like, don't do that. That's looks impressive, but very hazardous.
Yeah. I think so it's funny that he has a cape because it's ridiculous, but at the same time, it sort of works because that's what he thinks of himself. You know, he thinks he's a god, and so of course he needs a cape.
Yeah, and you know, it goes with the whole visual of this is, like you said, it is a very kind of comic book story. We didn't talk about this, but there are a lot of sort of noir aspects and like comic aspects visually when you're reading this. Like they talk about, you know, the shadows, like them ducking in and out of the shadows and like the light of someone's cigarette. And, you know, like I said at the start, Megan's kind of this femme fatale and Steelheart is like this typical superhero with this billowing cape. And, you know, at times maybe he's a little too over the top with with some of these, but you know, it ties in well with this kind of X-Men thing he has going on. And yeah, Steelheart, he's kind of undermining that idea of like the visual is Steelheart as this hero. And you know, that's why his David's dad at the start is like, oh, you know, now the hero has arrived and it's all going to be great. And then he subverts that. So that was very interesting to me.
And then David's father dies.
Yeah. Hopefully Sanderson kind of continues that theme in the next couple books as well. Karen, I think we have some feedback directed at you that is not related to Steelheart from our Bookmas Great Joke episode. Do you want to read that one out?
Yes, I do. This is from Sonia, and she says, Karen, I was really interested in the book Love Soy Candles, which I mentioned in that episode as one of the gifts that would be great to give to book lovers. And she says, when I checked them out on Etsy, I found that their studio is a couple of miles from where I live. They sell them in a store that's about 3 blocks from me. Going to smell them tomorrow. Thank you for the great idea. And then she said, update, I visited the cool store for the book lovers candles, and between Oxford Library and Hufflepuff, I went with the Hufflepuff candle and another one called Christmas Hearth by a different artist. They didn't have Sherlock's Study, but I will check again to see if they got more in. They had a few others. Pemberley Rose is a very heady, rosy scent, and Don't Panic, Fresh Towel, smells like laundry on a summer's day. Thank you for inspiring me to finally visit this store and discover the great candles. The reason why I included this feedback, not only because it was directed at me and I get excited when people talk to me, but is because I didn't realize that they had other ones. Like, I hadn't actually checked out their other candles, and I didn't know they had like a Hufflepuff one. That's so cool.
I want the Don't Panic, Hitchhiker's Guide one. That sounds hilarious and amazing.
Fresh towel.
Yeah. But you always have to have a towel, Karen. Haven't you read the Hitchhiker's Guide? It's the number one rule.
No, but get this. I just bought it. Like, I guess there's like 5 stories or something. I bought the whole huge volume. And so now I have it and I can read it.
Oh, you bought the books?
Yeah.
Oh, that would be so fun. Yeah, it's like a 4-part trilogy or something. And then, yeah, it's, I think he wrote 5, and then there's a 6th one written by someone else. It's like a 5-part trilogy.
This one, I think, that's has the joke. All, what? Oh, 5-part trilogy. Yeah. I think it has, yeah, all 5 stories in this one. Cause like the volume is huge.
Yeah. It's, they're so good. Oh God, I'm so pleased. I love Douglas Adams. Okay. You'll have to report back. I'm so proud of this choice. Okay, so that's it for Book Hype this week. Don't forget, you can get in touch with us on Twitter at Book Hype. We would love to know what you thought of Steelheart, or, you know, just what else you're reading, what else you're buying for Christmas. If you have purchased any candles recently, you can tell us that too. You can leave us a comment on the post for this podcast on hypeable.com. That's where all of our podcasts can be found. And hey, if you feel so inclined, maybe you could leave us a review on iTunes. We haven't asked for a while, and we really appreciate that. It's a great way for other people to find the show. And don't you want to share the book love? Because we sure do. And I'm just going to plug, we have a new show on Hypeable called Hero Hype. So we were talking all about, you know, kind of comic books and superheroes today. If you want to hear more about that, you can check out Hero Hype, which I am on with another podcaster, Donya, who does Not Another Teen Wolf podcast with Karen. It's all related here. And we talk all about superhero TV and film and comic books and all of that great stuff. So if you want to check that out, you can find that on Hypeable as well. Do you want to plug anything?
Rewatchable. Right now we are into the 3rd season of Avatar The Last Airbender. I'm completely obsessed with it. I didn't think that I would be, but it's a really, really, really good show, and I'm kind of bummed that we're heading into the last season for it.
Yeah, well, still time for people to catch up on that and then join in the discussion. So that's it for Book Hype. We'll be back next time, maybe with some kind of end of year in review show. I'm not quite sure. We'll let you know. Maybe we'll let Karen choose what we do for that as well, because this one worked out so well. And we'll let you know once we have decided on our next book to review, so that you'll have plenty of time to read it before we get up to it. So until next time, I'm Marima.
And I'm Karen.
Goodbye.
Bye.